Well, brethren, it's good to be here again with all of you. You know, I've got quite a bit of information concerning current events and world news that I'd like to launch into right away here without any delay, so I'd like to kind of get right down to business. You know, it's becoming quite a bit of common knowledge anyway on the international level that Europe is, in fact, on the rise. Now, here in the United States, this news about a European Union, the fact that Europe is building some momentum economically and possibly futuristically, even politically, this news and this kind of information really hasn't been sensationalized and, quite frankly, hasn't really been received by the American public with any sense of significance. Yet, nevertheless, as we here in the United States, and like I said, I can't really speak for those in Canada or in other parts of the world. All I can do is, being an American here in the United States, I can tell you quite confidently that much of the fact that Europe's rise to a more prominent economic level as a union of nation states that will in fact have significance on the world scene just has not been that significant in the United States press, be it in magazines, newspapers, or periodicals. Yet the fact is, Europe is growing, and it is building momentum. And going since 1957, as a matter of fact, it's been increasing, and frankly increasing with quite a bit of significance and influence on the international level. As mentioned in 1957, since the Treaty of Rome was ratified and those original six nations that originally pooled their resources together to try and forge some small effort, nevertheless a beginning effort, to unite economically. We knew those six nations back then as the EEC, or the European Economic Community, and it commenced in a formidable effort back then in 1957, early 1958, to cooperate economically. And even though it was a small step, nevertheless, it was a first step. And like in most cases, all things start out small. But nevertheless, it was a very critical and crucial step in the development of a European Union, because as we will see in Bible prophecy, it is a must in terms of the end time scenarios of events, because as many of us are well aware, history does in fact repeat itself. Now, in addition to this, going as far back as March of 1962, in the weekly news magazine from England called Topic, I want to read something here about the Vatican and its comments going all the way back then as far as its perception, that is, the Vatican's perception on this common market. And the reason I want to bring this into play is because ultimately the Roman Catholic Church is going to play a very major role in this emerging European Union. And I think it's imperative for all of us to understand, going as far back as almost, you know, when the original six nations that formed the European Economic Community originally started back in 1957, and this goes back now to about 1962 here. And I'm quoting now from this particular magazine called The Topic from England, and I quote now, "The Vatican considers the common market the work of divine providence. Not since the times of Spain's Charles V has a Roman Catholic political force been so strongly welded. Not since the end of the Holy Roman Empire has the Holy See been offered a Catholic rallying point like the common market. If the Pact of Rome, which created the common market, had been signed within the Vatican walls, it could not have favored the Church more. Small wonder, then, that the Roman Church is smiling benignly over the formation of what Vatican officials defined as the greatest Catholic superstate the world has ever known." And friends, brethren, I mean, it is unbelievable in many respects when you understand that that quote going all the way back to 1962 and now coming forward to 1998, and realizing that this European Union has accumulated now up to about 15 nation states, of which there are additional ones that were formerly part of the Soviet Union, which are lobbying to enter into this fraternity, this European Union, this United States of Europe, and are bringing with them a multitude of people that are going to be consolidated under one constitution that was further ratified in 1991 called the Maastricht Treaty, which has already been ratified and already is the basis of their constitution as of 1991, and as I say, is consolidating potentially up to about 500 million people, and even portending to present even more opportunity for more people to come into this confederation. 500 million people, by the way, is about twice the size of the United States of America. And as I mentioned already, this European Union portends to have the potential of being twice the size of not only America, but America and Canada combined, the whole North American continent, to be twice that size in population ultimately. And history has proved that this ancient Babylonian mystery religion, today known as the Holy Roman Catholic Church, also, as pointed out here in this quote, as far back then, its perception of it being one of the greatest things since sliced bread, because it views it that way, I think it's significant to realize that it too is going to play a very important part in the destiny of this emerging bestial Roman government. It's well connected, very, very well connected in history. And I think it is imperative for many of us to take a little bit of time to review some of that connection in history. I want to turn now to Daniel chapter 7 for a moment and review some of the things of how and where this Romanish government finds its roots. And perhaps we can begin to understand then the significance of where this governmental system is taking us. Here in chapter 7, in the book of Daniel, verse 1, we find that in the first year of Belshazzar, the king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream. So here the prophet Daniel has a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. And he wrote the dream, and he told the sum of the matters. And Daniel spoke, and he said, and I saw, and this is what he said, in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven strove upon the great sea. And the four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse, one from another. The first was like a lion, and it had eagle's wings. And I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth, and made stand upon the feet as a man. And the man's heart was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second, like to a bear. And it raised up itself on one side, and had three ribs in the mouth, it between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise, and devour much flesh. After this I beheld, and lo, like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast also, this one, had four heads, and that's significant. Remember, there is a seven-headed beast of which is connected in the description of Revelation 13 that is used to describe that end-time empire of which will be existing on the earth when Jesus returns. And consequently, if you begin to count up these heads, and you'll see here we're going to count seven, you can then begin to understand how the beast in Revelation 13 described there is connected back here to Daniel 7. Now notice, you've got a lion with one head, you've got a bear with one head, you've got a leopard though with four heads. Four, one and one is six, okay? And here in verse 7, we read of the one with the seventh, or the seventh head, basically, because we have another beast here. And this one in verse 7 we see, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth, and it devoured and broke in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So now we see a beast with seven heads, and this last head, this last beast that was more exceedingly dreadful than any other, also has 10 horns. So in our minds, we have a 7-headed, 10-horned beast. And, verse 8, I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn. In other words, another little, as we will see, leader, before whom there were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots, and behold, in his horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Now, at this point, Daniel begins to describe some things regarding what went on in heaven and the fact that he beheld thrones were cast down and the Ancient of Days did sit. And we see here, and for the sake of time, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail regarding verses 9 through about 15. You can read that perhaps at your own leisure. I'll just reference the fact that ultimately this beast that has the 10 horns and the 7 heads will be beat up and basically conquered by God in the latter days. But at any rate, what I want to do is drop down here to verse 16. Because here we begin to see the interpretation of the vision that Daniel has here in chapter 7. And verse 16, the Bible begins to interpret itself. And we read, I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all this. And so he told me and made me known the interpretation of the things. These great beasts, verse 17 now, which are four kings which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. And then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron, and his nails of brass, which devoured and broke in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet. And of the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom 3 fell, even of that horn that had the eyes and the mouth that spoke very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them, until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus, he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour, and I want you to understand this, it shall devour the whole earth. And I think that's an important aspect to recognize here, brethren, because we see here Daniel recognizes that this fourth beast is going to be so bestial and so hungry in its appetite and voraciousness on the earth that it will, as your Bible says, devour the whole earth and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. Now, verse 24, and the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall rise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, or against God, basically. And he shall wear out the saints. In other words, there will be Christians, people who represent Jesus Christ, the true living Jesus Christ, the real Jesus Christ, who will be in conflict with this system. And this individual, this being, this horn, this little horn that will rise up among these 10 kings will basically speak against God and wear out, beat up, martyr, kill, and essentially destroy the saints of the Most High. And further, think to change times and laws, meaning obviously ceremonies and religious rites and observances that are relative to and related to religious rites. And it goes on here, and they shall be given into his hand until a time, times, and a dividing of times. In other words, we see here basically 3.5 years, 42 months, as pointed out in other scriptures and in overlays of other biblical prophecies, but they're all in the same, all lane, all simultaneous events that is going on same time while this beast is for a short time, 3.5 years, 42 months, in a position of total rulership in many respects of this planet, and essentially is wearing down the saints, speaking great blasphemies against God, and changing times and laws. It's a pretty sad description here of the planet Earth and a social system that is very oppressive, to say the least. Verse 26, "But the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion, to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me." His thoughts, he was cogitating, and boy, his mind, he was going in circles and probably quite sick to his stomach. He was troubled, and his countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. So Daniel didn't really even understand this himself, but nevertheless, he knew that it was a vision for the end times, describing the condition of the earth, the political, the social, and the military conditions of the time when God would come back and reclaim this planet and give it to his saints. However, not without previous to that, the saints being beat up pretty bad, along with the rest of the earth, as it succumbs to the oppressive leadership and rule, rank rule, I should say, monarchical rule, dictatorship rule of this bestial government that is described by the beast, the fourth beast there in verse 7 of this chapter 7, of which also had 10 horns. So here we see, ultimately, in the latter days, a kingdom, a government that will be devouring the whole world, and of which has its roots going all the way back to a kingdom called Babylon. Now, to understand this a little bit better, brethren, we have to turn back to Daniel 2. I'm not going to read the whole chapter over there, other than to reference the fact that many of you perhaps already know about the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and how he wanted his dream interpreted, and how he didn't want to tell anybody the dream because he felt that would just contribute to different interpretations based on personal speculation of those individuals that he would call in front of him to interpret the dream. So he put a spin on it and said, "No, I'm not going to tell you what I dreamt. What I'm going to ask you to do is you tell me what I dreamt and the interpretation." Well, make a long story short, Daniel was able to do that. And in verse 36, after Daniel tells him what the dream is about, we now come to the interpretation of the dream. And we read here, Daniel chapter 2 and in verse 36, "This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. You, O king, are a king of kings. For the God of heaven hath given you a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of heaven hath he given into your hand, and has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold." Now, in the vision, you'll have to notice over there in verse 32, you have an image. A head was of fine gold, the breast and his arms of silver, and his belly and thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. So we have this image from the head to the toes of different mixtures of materials. And here Daniel identifies Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian kingdom or empire, as basically the first empire in this sequence of empires that would cover the span and the whole scope of human history until the return of Jesus Christ. And so this is what I mean when I say that the end time government, the end time empire, that empire of which will ultimately be on the earth oppressing the planet and the nations thereof when God returns, when Jesus returns, I should say. He, that is, that empire reaches all the way back to Babylon. And this is where I'm coming from. This is what your Bible is indicative of. There is a direct connection of that end time empire. Not only, though, And this is important to understand, not only though politically, but also religiously, that empire's rights, religion, its method of control, and its technique in teaching God and the concepts that it will advance to its populace, those of which it will rule over, will be of a Babylonian, sun-worshipping, Egyptian, Mithraic orientation, brethren. And that is something that all of us need to be well aware of. God is not in any way, shape, or form happy about that system. Quite frankly, He is upset, for in many parts of your Bible, you know and I know, He has stated quite emphatically that He is a jealous God and does not want us, His people, His creation, to be worshiping the creation more than the Creator, if you know what I mean. And so much of the Babylonian mysteries go back to sex and phallic worship and different kinds of worshiping of the sun that put upon its believers all different types of religious rites, from human sacrifices to the worshiping of mythological gods and sex organs. And it's ridiculous, and yet today, if you look real hard, you will see those very things in some of the very celebrations and ceremonies of some of the most prominent religious organizations that today we see as common, traditional Christian organizations. The most prominent one that involves itself with all of this worship of creation more than the Creator is the Holy Roman Catholic Church, with all of its saints and saints' days and Our Lady of Hearts celebration and the celebration of different holidays like St. Valentine's Day and Easter and eggs and bunnies. All of these things are essentially sex symbols of ancient sun-worshipping rites that are found back all the way through the Egyptian, Mithra, as well as Babylonian traditions and celebrations of its religion. Even nuns and priests and the way the whole thing is structured, it's amazing if you take the time to study this particular detail, how corollary to those ancient Babylonian sun-worshipping systems the Holy Roman Catholic Church is. Nevertheless, here in Daniel 2, Daniel continues to illustrate the fact that there is going to be thereafter additional kingdoms of not such great influence as Babylon originally was, but nevertheless, in sequence, one right after another. Verse 39, after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to you, and another third of brass which shall bear rule over all the earth, and a fourth shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaks in pieces and subdues all things, and as iron that breaks all things shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas you saw the feet and the toes part of a potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. In other words, it won't be real strong. It'll be a mixed bag of cultural backgrounds and established cultures and languages, and essentially a unification, a confederation of nation states is the indication here that you get. But there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as you saw the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken or brittle. Basically, as I say, it won't be real strong, not like Babylon was, but nevertheless, it'll be a affiliated unification of nation states that will have pooled themselves together to act as somewhat of a strong confederation, strong enough that in Daniel 7 we find will influence, impact, and oppress the whole world, it says there in Daniel 7. Nevertheless, here in verse 43 we read, and whereas, chapter 2, book of Daniel, verse 43, whereas you saw iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. But they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings, in these 10 toes, in other words, we read here in Daniel 2 about 10 toes. In Daniel 7, we read about 10 horns. In Revelation 13, we're going to read when we get there, again, the description describing that end time empire as being directly connected to Daniel 7, which is directly connected to Daniel 2. Therefore, showing the connection throughout history of going back to that Babylonian system. And therefore, quite significant for us, brethren, to recognize ourselves and to be sure that we're watching ourselves not to be a part of that system. God is a jealous God, and much of God's correction, even upon His own nation Israel, was due to the adulterous relationships and religious fornication, if I can use that term, though strong, nevertheless, it's the way God views it, in their defiling their culture and social system by allowing these pagan ideas and concepts to infiltrate their minds and their understanding of what the true God was or is. And hence, they ended up, in short and in summary, I don't want to oversimplify things, but nevertheless, what it boils down to is they ended up worshiping the creation more than the Creator. But here in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 44, it says, "In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to you, king, what shall come to pass hereafter. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure." So in short and in summary, there would be 4 major Gentile ruling, world ruling empires with a political and social and religious structure that would influence from the time of Babylon to the return of Jesus Christ the world's cultural system. And in summary, you could summarize this broad influence of these Gentile empires into 4 different styles or 4 different types. And as we will see now, moving up to Daniel 8, we'll identify basically the first 3, and then, of course, we're left with the 4th to be, with history as our teacher, none other than a Romanish type of government. As you'll see here in chapter 8, again, for sake of time, I'm just going to summarize here that you will see a vision again that Daniel has about, I think it is roughly 2 years after the first vision there that he had in Daniel 7. This one comes 2 years later in chapter 8, and it involves basically 2 animals, a ram that has 2 horns and a he-goat. And this ram and he-goat kind of face off and battle it out. And we see and understand that the he-goat prevails. Verse 8, "Therefore the he-goat waxed very great. And when he was strong, the great horn was broken. And for it came up 4 notable ones toward the 4 winds of heaven." Now remember, the leopard in Daniel 7 had 4 heads. There's a correlation there, as you're about to see. Remember that. So we have here a ram and a he-goat. The he-goat prevails. Out of it we see here 4 notable ones toward the 4 winds of heaven. And then, verse 9, out of those 4 comes this one little horn that ultimately will lead into that 4th type of government that is going to be exceedingly great and unlike all the other beasts. Now, dropping down to verse 15 here of Daniel chapter 8, we begin to see the identification of this ram and he-goat of which follows the other beasts that were listed there in Daniel 7 and in Daniel 2. And we've already established, based on Daniel 2, that the first head of gold was Babylon, that the first beast in the scenario of beasts described in Dan 7 was also Babylon. We have not, by the Bible anyway, identified the remaining three. But now we're going to certainly identify two of those three right now. Here in verse 15 we read, "It came to pass," Daniel chapter 8, verse 15, "when I, even I, Daniel, had seen the vision and sought for the meaning, then, behold, there stood before me as the appearance of a man, and I heard his voice." And we drop down here. Now, verse 18, "as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground. But he touched me and set me upright, and he said, Behold, I will make you know what shall be in the last end of the indignation. For at the time appointed, the end shall be. The ram which you saw having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia." So the Medes and Persians, the Medo-Persian Empire, was the ram. And the rough goat, that is the he-goat, is the king of Grecia, or the Greco-Macedonian. And the great horn that is between his eyes, the first king. And of course, history shows us that Alexander the Great was that first king. And basically, his kingdom was divided into fours after he had died. His four generals took over and basically set up shop in four different areas. Egypt to the south, Syria to the north, Thrace to the west, and the Seleucus to the east. And they, that is those empires, then began to influence society, political, cultural, and social values in architecture, in science, as well as in religion, in astrology, and that influence continued right on, brethren, into the fourth beast, which came onto the world scene just about 2100 or 2200 years ago, known as the Holy Roman Empire, and devoured up all empires as a pretype of an empire yet to occur in the latter days, of which would be existing at the time of Jesus Christ. Notice here now in verse 23, "And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding, dark sentences shall stand up, and his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power, and he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper in practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people." This is the same one that treads down the saints in Daniel 7. This is the same one that is described there in verse 9 through about 14, that takes away the daily sacrifice and so on. This is the same one that is going to try and change times and laws and speak great words against the Most High and wear down the saints. Verse 24, "and his power shall be mighty." Verse 25, "and through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many, and he shall also stand up against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without hands. And the vision of the evening and the morning," again, the daily sacrifices, "which was told, is true. Wherefore, shut you up the vision, for it shall be for many days. And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick. Certain days afterward I rose up and did the king's business, and I was astonished at the vision, but none understood it." So here we have, following this Greco-Macedonian Empire, the outgrowth of a bestial system that would be consistently existing down through the ages, of which would once again manifest in the latter days for one last hurrah. And it would be an empire of exceedingly great magnitude, rising out of an abyss. John says that it was, it is not, and yet it is. And ultimately will go into perdition. And this leader, this of fierce countenance, would emerge and destroy many through crafty policies, through peace and prosperity, through nicey platitude words, things that would cause people to essentially feel good about this individual and kind of give him the support that he would be looking for and desiring. However, brethren, the hideousness of this system, however, prior to all of this end-time development and the emergence of this exceedingly magnanimous, destructive, and oppressive government, this same system, down through the ages, for many years, would influence and deceive, misinform, and counterfeit God's true values, would misdirect people's perceptions and concepts about what is right and what is wrong. And this satanic system would devour mankind's geopolitical and social systems like a hungry beast. It would essentially influence people into thinking things that are wrong to be right. In the eyes of God, things that are right, those things this system would try and teach the people, it would be wrong. Because it, that is this system, would not want people to understand what God expects of them. It would do its devil-headed best to camouflage and hide what God truly wants for its people and hopefully misdirect, misguide, and consequently lead individuals, human beings, away from God, alienating them from the true God. And it's so subtle. And as I've already said, it is so subtle that John describes it as something that was, is not, and yet it is. In other words, it exists, but not openly. Yet, it's obvious to all those who have an open mind. Because you see, the influences of this system are all around us. And since the days of the Roman Empire and the Babylonian mysteries, going all the way back to them, our world, our culture, our politics have been influenced by this system, brethren. It has. And whether we like to admit it or not, it has skewed our perceptions of what is right and what is wrong and what is good and what is acceptable to God and what isn't. We, unfortunately, have been misinformed and misguided. And like it's been said, coming into a movie halfway through, it's hard to determine who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. Yet one thing is for certain, brethren, whether we look to the East or to the West, be it in religion or politics, pagan worship, worshiping the creation more than the Creator, phallic worship, that is of sex organs and different phallic symbols, everything from steeples to eggs to rabbits to fish, it's amazing, of mythological persons and gods of worship and saints and people that are of legend. These things have served only to distract us from the true God. And in the last days, brethren, in the last days, whether we like to admit it or not, the forces of these pagan advances are destined to increase with fervor. Yes, you can bet on it. They are going to increase with fervor, ultimately causing mankind to be even driven towards self-inflicted extinction by virtue of his own greed, lust, and avarice. And brethren, you are going to see this empire in Europe begin to gain momentum and develop a very greedy, ferocious appetite that is going to be destined to swallow up whole nation economies, whole nation cultures, and ultimately militaries, to where it is going to get so fat and sassy that it's going to oppress, as pointed out in Daniel 7, it is going to oppress the whole world. And I'll tell you, When I read Revelation 13, it gets my attention. Over here, and I'd like to turn there for a moment, and in verse 1, I begin to recognize, and I hope you will too, recognize the connection of what we've been establishing here. Over here in Revelation chapter 13, verse 1, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having," look at this, "seven heads and 10 horns. Now, on top of the 10 horns, though, are 10 crowns. And remember, what did we read in Daniel 7? We read that we have a seven-headed beast. Do we not? Of course we do. We've got basically a lion, a bear, and a leopard with 4 heads, and then a beast made of iron with ferocious teeth that had 10 horns. And here on these 10 horns, we have now in chapter 13 the addition of 10 crowns. And we're told in Daniel 7 that those 10 horns are what? 10 kings. And what are crowns relative to but kings? So here we're in very strong continuity. We're in very good, solid connection and good, solid attachment to Daniel 7 and Daniel 2. And the beast, verse 2, Revelation 13, "And the beast which I saw," look at this, "was like unto a leopard, and a bear, and a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death. And his deadly wound," that is, it was, and it is not, but yet it is, "it was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast." Why, how could it be? How could it emerge out of the destruction that it was in to become such a prominent power? Are we wondering about a United States of Europe currently forging a confederation of nation states, brethren, consolidating right now 500 million people under one constitution? Soon, by the year 2002, by their own admission, to have their own common currency so that they can have trade and commerce amongst themselves, like here in the United States and in the provinces of Canada, where they can trade and spend their money across from the Pacific to the Atlantic, so they will be able to do it as we are. Do you know how strong that's going to make them? By virtue of the year 1999, the euro is going to begin to engage on the banking system, and therefore what that means is basically countries doing business with the European Union are going to have to be doing business with the euro, and it's going to be controlled by the European Central Bank, the ECB, which will be managed by the Germans, and which will be located, of all things, in Frankfurt, because Germany has fashioned the ECB, that is, I should say, the European Union has fashioned the ECB, the European Central Bank, after the same structure of the Bundesbank, controlled by that European Central Bank and managed by Germany and potentially uniting ultimately under one religion. Brethren, watch. Watch for the Holy Roman Catholic Church, Catholicism again, to rise and influence the governmental structure, policies, and political movements and interactions as it has down through history. What am I talking about? Well, you're going to see here, when I read here in chapter 13 these connecting scriptures, it gets my attention, like I said. In addition, over here in Revelation 17, we begin to read in verse 1, and this gets my attention even more because now I begin to see what the Bible is telling me by virtue of the vision of which the Apostle John saw when he was on the Isle of Patmos under divine inspiration of the Holy Spirit, and he brought all of this to the end of a pen to let us in these latter days begin to understand the connection of the 4 major empires of which would exist from Babylon down to the return of Jesus Christ, so that we could understand by virtue of the fruit the identity of this beast. And here we begin to see it in chapter 17 and verse 1. And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, come here, I will show you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters. And of course, many of us understand that this is a direct implication and statement of a religious organization that is committing fornication, religiously speaking, by becoming involved in politics, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication. Here's my point well made, verse 2. And the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication, her influences, and her misdirections and misinformations and disinformation, I should say, and misguidance of what God is all about and what is right and what is wrong by comparison to what the true God expects. Verse 3, so he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of names of blasphemy, having, look at this, seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and colored, decked in precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hands full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. Upon her forehead was the name written. Look at this. Where does it go back to? Where does it connect back to, brethren? Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abomination of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Here she is sitting on many waters in verse 1, it points out. Here she also is a Babylonian mystery religion. That is, she is consumed with worshiping signs or worshiped signs of the creation more than the Creator, and is responsible for the very deaths of multiple thousands of Christians, true Christians. Get to know your history. What organization is responsible for literally multiple thousands, tens of thousands, if not millions of lives being destroyed through the Inquisition, by orders of individuals, namely the Jesuits and the Dominicans and the Franciscans? These orders that were used basically to alleviate humankind of demons and devils through torture and torment and burning people alive and stealing their land and their properties, and by requiring relatives to pay indulgences, to pay for the souls of their departed loved ones who were stuck in purgatory, and unless they would pay enough money, they couldn't get them out to go to heaven. Brethren, you need to realize that God hates this system. It doesn't stand for anything good, and it's identified very clearly here in Revelation 17, as we will see. There isn't any conclusion one can come to other than what I'm talking about here once one knows his history. He goes on here in verse 7, the angel said unto me, why do you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns. The beast that you saw was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition, and they shall dwell on the earth and shall wonder whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundations of the world when they beheld the beast that was and is not and yet is. And here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. And that's both prophetic as well as literal, brethren, because there were essentially seven resurrections, or will be seven resurrections, of this latter time beast, commencing with Justinian and the Frankish Empire and the Ottomans, the Habsburgs, Napoleon, Garibaldi, and Hitler, were virtually six attempts to resurrect a Roman-style government from the time of its inception to the time of its fall to the time of its revival until now, the latter days, brethren, when we're waiting for this seventh resurrection. And the beast that was and is not, verse 10, and there are seven kings, five are fallen, one is, the other's not yet come, and when he comes, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goes into perdition. There will be a dictator, an individual who will be considered essentially the leader of this multinational confederation of a combine that will literally have great impact and significance on the world, and will ultimately be the demise of the United States of America, Canada, Australia, surrounding islands, and of course, even Great Britain. But here it goes on, the ten horns which you saw are ten kings, verse 12, which have received no kingdom as yet, but do receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast, a very short span. But dropping down here to verse 15, and he says to me, the waters which you saw where the whore sits are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. This whore has ruled nations, peoples, and tongues. And ultimately, the political system is going to take the religious portion of its system to task and will literally have conflict with it. But I want to point something out. That's another issue. Staying focused again on my subject here, brethren, I want to point something out here in verse 18, which is very important for all of us to understand in regards to who and what this system is. John writes, "In the woman which you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth." Now, what city at the time of John's writing, which he was writing in about 90 to 100 AD, was ruling the world, who was essentially oppressing the world, of whose heel was on many peoples, nations, and tongues? You know, and I know, brethren, history shows it was none other than Rome. It is clear. There is a holy Roman connection all the way back to Babylon, which has influenced our social, geopolitical structure and system from that time until now. And we are waiting, yes, for a last and final resurrection of this holy Romanish empire to materialize. It is beginning, brethren. The time has arrived. And you are beginning to see the beginning emergence of the Holy Roman Empire under the nomenclature of the European Union. It's going to have a common currency by the year 2002 with a central bank in place which will rival the Federal Reserve here in the United States and the world. Because remember, the Federal Reserve is essentially the world's standard for monetary exchange. The ECB, as it begins to pick up momentum and begins to pick up its strength and build its confidence and begin to weld not only economically, but begin to weld itself together politically and ultimately coalesce itself into a religio-political machine, that system is destined to take humanity to the brink of genocide, brethren. And it's time you understand, it's time, brethren, that you recognize that there literally is a Fourth Reich on the rise. Another Roman Empire, and it will hold the world hostage, and it will be the demise of the United States of America and Canada and essentially most of the Western democracies. We can't stop it, brethren. No, hoarding guns and saving your food or buying dehydrated foods or building bomb shelters or running won't change anything. The preparation that we need to begin to get busy about, brethren, is getting our lives right with our God. It's time. It's time to truly begin to repent and to recognize that we are in the last days. The times are approaching, and they are fast accumulating a momentum that is going to begin to pick up speed. And consequently, if we haven't begun to think about it, time is of the essence, and it is a wasting. We need to really, seriously, if we haven't already, begin to prepare ourselves for accepting Jesus Christ as our personal Savior. We need to get right with God and get on with preparing ourselves mentally, emotionally, and spiritually for the kingdom of God, adjusting our attitudes and our behavior. Because, brethren, the time is here, and consequently, it is important for all of us to recognize that now more than ever. Over here in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, I would like to close in verse 7. I read, and quote, "For the mystery of iniquity does already work. Only he who now lets will let until he be taken out of the way. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs of lying wonders and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness." We need to develop, brethren, a love for the truth. As time goes on and Europe begins to build momentum, it will become obvious that we are amongst and in the shadow of an emerging beast out of the abyss. And all the world, yes, all the world, will wonder at the beast. But how about it, brethren? Will you? Or will you be expecting it and be ready for it?